Hi, this is Kate Brownfield from ADHD Kids Can Thrive. And today I have a very special guest with me. His name is Sean G. McCormick, and he's an executive function specialist. He guides students to overcome procrastination, disorganization, and anxiety by teaching time management, prioritization, and communication skills so they feel motivated, prepared, and empowered. Sean, it's a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me, Kate. I'm very, very happy to be chatting with you about how to help ADHD kids thrive because that is my mission.
Yeah, you sound like a miracle worker. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So let's start with basically what are executive function skills. So I think any child who's diagnosed with ADHD is guaranteed to struggle with executive functioning skills. However, not every child that struggles with executive functioning skills has ADHD.
Right. True? Yeah. It's kind of like, no, true. And it's, anytime I hear that or something like that, I'm like, it's kind of like all squares are a rectangle, but not all rectangles are square, or however it goes. I probably butchered that, but it's, yes, it's that kind of analogy that anybody with ADHD is certain. I mean, I think they've played around with the idea of converting ADHD to calling it executive dysfunction as opposed to ADHD. But you can also have executive function challenges, which everybody does, without having ADHD. I mean, everybody struggles at times because executive functions are so, they're so based on some pretty basic factors, which is sleep, nutrition, and kind of like awareness. So if you don't have a good night's sleep, your executive functions are going to be challenged, right? You can't like think as fast. You can't plan as well. You're probably slower to respond. So your executive functions are really important for life. But if you already, it's kind of like if you're already starting off with challenges related to working memory or to your ability to pay attention, sustain attention, as we see with kids with ADHD, it's going to be more impactful even than a limited night's sleep or, not eating the right amount of protein on a certain day.
Yeah. Okay. So what are executive functioning skills truly?
Yeah.
Like, why do we need them? What is it?
So the kind of bigger picture around that is that executive function skills are the skills that allow us to achieve goals, right? So they're not only achieving the goal, but it's also helping us adjust in the moment to, get to our goal. So let's say we're driving and there's the highway is blocked off, but you need to get somewhere to an interview in 30 minutes. Can you, pull over, reroute on Google Maps, make a plan, and then, take these back roads to arrive at your desired destination within the appropriate amount of time. So it's really the different skills that we use on a day-to-day basis to help us arrive at desired or, desired goals, right? So that's the bigger picture of what executive functioning does for us. And that taps into a lot of different processes in the mind and the body. It's kind of like our cognitive abilities, our emotional regulation abilities, all these different things. But executive function skills, those are the specific skills that we can actually shape, right? So they're called, I love the word skills because people are like, oh, if I have bad executive function, I'm screwed. There's nothing I can do. And the reality is these are skills that can be developed. And that's why I love to talk to parents about this is because sometimes they lose hope. They're like, oh my God, my kid can't, pack their backpack. And how are they ever going to go to college and get married and, have a career? They get really worried about these things. And so what I tell parents is that, well, they're skills. And so I've actually broken them down into this acronym called POSITIVE. They're positive skills because I know it's really hard for parents to remember. So POSITIVE stands for planning, organization, self-management, advocacy, awareness. The I is inhibition. Are you able to stop, watching YouTube and return to your homework? The T is time management. The next I is initiation. Are you able to initiate difficult tasks? The V is for visualizing outcomes. So can you use your nonverbal working memory to visualize what you want to achieve. And then the E is for evaluating priorities. So can you take everything you're supposed to do and evaluate which one's going to help you get to your most important prioritized goal the quickest? So if people like those, what I can do, Kate, is I can share with you a link where people can download an infographic with those so they can remember that. I'll share that after when we're chatting.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay.
But that's how I help people remember it, because they're like, what is executive function? I'm like, well, think of them as positive skills, you know, that you can work on. And so you can press that 30-second back button on your podcast platform if you want to hear that again.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So it is teachable. Is it? It's yes. Teachable one step at a time.
Yes. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's what it's all about, is steps, right? You know, it's like the thing that is so overwhelming for parents, kids, is that they get assigned or expected to do these big things and they can't break them down into steps. That's a skill, that chunking, which is that plan. That's the planning piece, the P in positive, is can you plan it out in a way that's manageable for your executive function?
Right. So definitely kids with ADHD all go to school. And I think definitely as you advance yourself through school, I guess, get into junior high and definitely in high school, a child's executive functioning skills can really start to get stretched,
mm-hmm.
because the demand on these skill sets really start to come in play, because the child's supposed to be more independent. And I think it's assumed that they know how to plan and organize and chunk things down. So how does a parent help a kid who has ADHD where these things don't come to them naturally?
Yeah, great question. So the biggest transition points for kids are fifth to sixth grade, because you go from typically one teacher to maybe six or seven teachers. So you're expected to meet the demands for all those different adults. So that's one of the biggest transition points. And we can talk about how you can help your kid there. Then the next major transition point is from high school to college, because typically kids are moving out of the house. So not only they're expected to manage everything, you know, six or seven classes or whatever, they might also be working and they're living independently. So that comes with a whole nother range of executive demands. And then the last one is that leap from college or vocational school to employment, where all the scaffolding is removed and you just have to understand nonverbal cues and hidden messages in the workplace and be able to be successful. So those are three major transition points that parents can help their kids prepare for if they are thoughtful about it. So how do parents
help? How do you do it, John?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I could write a book on this, and this would probably be a 50-hour conversation to tell you everything, but let me give you three things that you can do. So first, I think for parents is educating yourself. So you really want to understand, like, why is this so hard for my kid? So that leap from fifth grade to sixth grade, well, the truth is they're being the amount of demand has increased exponentially, right? If you're managing six different teachers and their expectations and they have six different school portals, I mean, so just understanding that, like, a lot of parents come to me and they don't understand why their kid's struggling. Well, and it's because if you tried to log in with them and look at what they're expected to do and how they have to check every single class, identify the due dates, the directions, like, that's a lot of work. Like, I mean, sometimes when I think about school and I'm like, wow, how did I even manage six classes at the same time? Like, I have a hard time with running one business. You know what I mean? Like, it's a huge, huge expectation. So I think having empathy and an understanding of, like, what is it that kids are actually expected to do? Because once you understand that, then you can support them. So that's probably the biggest piece, is trying to really fully understand how expectations are changing, especially in this modern world, right? Where when I was doing class, it was different than how kids are doing it nowadays. And I understand it because I was a teacher and I've actually assigned things. I understand, you know, how the kid has to check it and where they can, you know, evaluate if it's correct or where the feedback is given and all those things. But parents need to understand that to some extent to truly be empathetic for their kids. So that's the biggest one. And then I think also learning strategies. So, like, as a parent, you know, a lot of parents are coming in with that you have to understand your parenting style. So there, you know, there's the bulldozer parent and there's the tiger parent and the helicopter parent. And like, what's your parenting style? And then how do you understand that so that you can communicate effectively with your kid? So if you tend to be a bulldozing parent, I'll give an example of that, or snowplow parent, that's where you're trying to like remove all the obstacles in your child's way so they can be successful. But what impact is that having? Well, that's actually creating a child with weak executive function skills, because they're not learning how to use their executive function skills to manage challenges. So understanding your parenting style, taking a parenting quiz or reading a little bit up on different parenting styles, and then understanding, okay, what am I doing and how do I reach kind of a more ideal parenting style, which is typically the authoritative style, which is you're not telling them what to do. You're expressing your expertise, but you're giving them choices and options. You're saying, hey, I know what you're going through. You can do this or this, and I can support you. And which one would you like to choose? And kind of trying to create options and scenarios where they can be successful without forcing them or overwhelming them or being pushy. Those are two big things you can do. And then the last one is just being accepting of your child. And you know, a lot of parents, they have really high expectations for their kids. And so they're like, you need to take all these AP classes. You're going to have to go to an Ivy League school. And you have to get to know your child, and your life and the way you lived your life might not be what's best or ideal for them. And so you really want to take time to get to know who the person is, even though it might not be exactly like you, but they might be able to be highly impactful and successful in their own right if you kind of remove how you think it should be as opposed to what's going to be best for them.
Yeah. Okay. That's great advice, Sean. So as you were saying these things, it was also making me think, as a parent, when we go into school, we're sitting amongst, you know, parents and children who are very typical. And mm-hmm. the standard line that comes out of teachers and the executive staff, if you will, at the schools is that now your child's entered junior high, you need to be hands off, you need to let them find their way. And they're talking really to the typical kids. And I feel like as a parent, you kind of get caught up in, this is what the school is saying we should be doing with our child, but they're not taking into account for those children who have ADHD, who are struggling with executive functioning skills. And so I think internally as a parent, you start to struggle with like, well, how am I supposed to help my child get through school and balance what typical children are able to do versus my child? And it's always trying to find that way of helping them without getting too enmeshed or too involved, I think, in helping them stay on track so they don't fail out of school, right? It's this dance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not black or white. There's no perfect solution, and it's individualized to every kid. And so I think, you know, I see that a lot, parents or school team members saying, oh, just let them figure it out. And then parents like, I tried and they failed and their confidence is shot and they don't want to go to school anymore. And so, yeah, that's not, neither of those, you know, doing everything for them or not doing anything at all is not the right way. There's a middle path. And so I think the key to remember is you are your child's best advocate. And they're under your tutelage until they're 18 years old. And so you do have the right to connect with the school and say, hey, I'm seeing this. I've tried this, this, and this, and I'm still seeing that they're missing assignments, that they're not asking for help. You know, they're not staying for office hours, even though I've encouraged this. How can you help? You know, especially public school students, it's different in private school, but public school students have so many rights that parents need to be aware of. You know, for example, as a parent, you have the right to request an assessment. If you're seeing your kid struggle with the same thing year after year, you can request an assessment in writing, and the school is required to come up with an assessment plan or reject your request, which usually doesn't happen, within 15 days, school days, or they're in legal jeopardy. Just understanding your rights as a parent is really important. And then, of course, you don't want to be doing it in a way that's damaging to your child. So it's not that you're just going and yelling at the teachers, but you have to advocate for your child. So if your child's struggling and they're not making sense of the material and missing assignments, you do need to call meetings and invite your child to join in and say, hey, as a parent, my expectation is that, you know, you're able to do, you know, you're able to at least earn C's or better or whatever, you know, you're right. Not failing. Like failing is not acceptable, right? It's not, you know, in California, for example, it's required by California Ed Code that a teacher informs the parent and provides a plan of support if their child is in danger of failing class. That never happens. I can tell you that. Like almost, it rarely happens. And it's not the teacher's fault. It's just that teachers have 120 or 150 kids on their caseload in general ed. And so they can't give your child that attention. So parents of kids with ADHD who are really struggling, they need to learn how to advocate for their kids' needs. They need to learn how to work with the school. And if their needs are not being met, they need to understand that they have the parental rights and rights under IDEA, as well as, you know, basically different federal regulations to allow them to request supports and to get reimbursed, even in certain cases, if they're providing those supports privately.
Right.
So that I kind of went on my high horse there, but parent, you know, the big message is parents do have to step in, and they do need to make sure their kid has at least appropriate supports to get through school and not fail.
Yeah. To get graduated through high school. Mm-hmm. Okay. So does it help to work with an outside source to help a child learn executive functioning skills? I know this is what you do for a living, and is it helpful? And at what point would a parent consider that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly it's going to be helpful in the sense that anytime you have a challenge, you want to go to someone who has expertise in that challenge and support you. So there are some amazing parents out there. I mean, all parents are amazing. I'm a parent of two little girls, and all parents are amazing.
Yes, they are.
but I would say it depends on your situation. So if you're a parent who wants to kind of dive in and be patient and understanding of your child throughout the process, then yes, you know, there's plenty of resources out there. I mean, you can look up CHAD, you know, there's going to be something in there for pretty much any scenario you can encounter as a parent raising a school-aged child. You can go to the Executive Function Online Summit with Seth Perler, and you can get 3 days of like incredible expertise and advice on how you can support your kid with ADHD. So there's all types of ways for you as a parent to become more and more knowledgeable about how to support your child. But I understand that a lot of parents are busy. They're working, they're raising other kids, maybe working multiple jobs. You know, they might be caring for parents or other people in their family. And so sometimes you don't have the time to invest in learning everything. You're going to like, look, I can make sure my kid gets to school and they're fed and comes home and has a safe place to sleep, but I can't necessarily, you know, do all the coaching that they need. And in some of those situations, the kids should have a special ed teacher who's doing that role for the parent because of the kid's disability or challenges, but they don't, because ADHD is kind of the redheaded stepchild of the special education system. And it's difficult for kids with ADHD to qualify under the category other health impairment. Oftentimes they don't qualify because ADHD is just harder to kind of diagnose in a way that connects with school-based challenges at times.
Right.
So if that is the case, if you don't have the time and the school is not being flexible and you're trying everything you can, then finding an executive function coach or a special education advocate can be an incredibly powerful support. And so how do you know when that point is? Well, if your kid's failing, if your kid's continuing to decline, if their confidence and self-esteem is decreasing, and you're seeing this over an extended period of time, that's when you do need to ask for help, you know, or find support. So some great ways you can do that: you can look up the Association of Educational Therapists, and you can use their search tool to find someone nearby you if you're looking for in person. Usually they list out as study skills if that's what most kids with ADHD are challenged by, if you want to filter by searches. So that's a great resource to find support. There's no like directory of executive function coaches, but if you search executive function coaches near me, you'll probably find some helpful things online. And you know, you can also go to CHAD. Actually, I have an article. I'll share this with you, Kate. It's like Executive Function Coaching, the Definitive Guide. I have a bunch of directories. So there's one for CHAD, Attitude Magazine. They have directories for coaches. I actually am not in either of those. I should probably put myself in those. But those are great ways to, you know, that's how to find support when you're starting to see like, this is something I can't do on my own and I need help. You do want to, you know, I would say don't wait, you know, don't let it keep going, because the impact is very damaging and kids are very emotionally sensitive. And so the sooner you can address the issue and start taking steps is the better.
Yeah. And what's the difference, like, if you, between a tutor and educational or executive functioning? How would a parent like prioritize? Do I need to just get my kid a tutor to help him get through the work and turn it in? Or should I be looking more strategically for them and getting an executive functioning coach?
Right.
How should we think about that as parents?
Yeah. So you get a tutor when your kid has a very specific subject matter challenge. So let's say like they just can't figure out chemistry equations and something. So a tutor could be helpful in that capacity. So you could like, there's websites. I can't really recommend them because I think, I don't know which one's the best, but I'm, you know, ones I hear about are like Wiseant, or I know you're in the Bay Area, I'm in the Bay Area. There's a great company called TutorCore. But if you're looking for, if your kid is struggling across curricular areas, so if like in every class they seem to be having missing assignments, if they're afraid to email their teachers, if it's more like there's some emotions attached to it, some shame, some organizational challenges, that's when you're looking for more of an executive function coach or an educational therapist. When the problem persists across settings, that you're going to need something more specialized than a tutor, because anyone can call themselves a tutor. But with executive function coaches, and this is all in this article I'll share with you, but I have a list of questions you can ask. So like, what's your educational background? What teaching experience do you have? What specific trainings have you done to become an executive function coach or an educational therapist? So you want to go through those questions and really understand like what is going to differentiate this person from a tutor, because that, you know, you're going to get what you pay for and what you search for, you know, right. if you go, you know, and it's like, I'm in the process of moving right now. And I hired someone to kind of try to do all these different jobs. I hired this electrician to come by and I was like, can you fix my fireplace too? Cause it's an electrical fireplace, as well as the home audio system. And he couldn't do any of those things. And it was like, I remembered once again, like, you got to get the right person for the job. You can't just try to fit, you know, someone who's somewhat in the area into doing the specific challenge that you have.
Yeah, that's great advice. It's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, these things cost money, of course. You know, I think that's the challenge for parents. But if you want to, what you can do is if you have a proven need, like if you can demonstrate over time that your kid has been missing assignments, is, you know, you've tried all these interventions, document all that stuff. And what parents can do is they can go to the school and they can actually do this little move called a unilateral placement. They can say, I'm unilaterally placing my child in executive function coaching services because they're having these problems and I'm requesting reimbursement. And I've seen it happen many times that parents get reimbursed for these services that their kid needs, and they can prove they needed them in order to make adequate progress in school.
Oh, that's a hot tip.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. There's an article on my blog, how to request compensatory funds, that people can check out with a template for actually making that request.
Okay. I'm going to have to look that up and I'll share it.
Mm-hmm. I'll share it with you. I'll follow up.
Okay.
With it.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. What advice would you have for parents with that, the never ending homework struggle? Like, I think building the skills where the child is able to like come home, like what, like the system, I guess, mm-hmm. of at least trying to help them build a pattern in getting the homework done mm-hmm. and turned in a timely manner. Like,
yeah, I think the key word there is pattern that you just shared. And it's, if you want the pattern of turning things in and confirming with the teacher that the expectations have been met, you have to train a student in the pattern. So for example, I have plenty of kids who come to me in my business and they're in that position where everything's missing all the time in a sense. And we teach them a pattern. So, you know, the first step is you just have to identify everything that's missing, right? You have to put in a list. So we teach them how to use Google Tasks because they can't lose that. And 60% of students are already enrolled in Google Suite. So it's across all those different platforms. You can use this tool called Google Tasks. So we just have them write down everything that's missing first, plus the point value of it. And then we say, okay, now you can see everything that's missing or late or is due within this week. Now, which class has the lowest grade? And we have them pull up their grades. And they're like, okay, well, I have a D in chemistry. Okay, now let's go back to your task list. Which assignment in chemistry has the greatest point value? Well, this lab I have to turn in. Okay, do you think we should start with that? Yeah, that makes sense. It's going to have the biggest impact on my D in chemistry. Right. So that's the process we teach to kids. Parents can do this process with, you have to be strategic. And the challenge that parents come up with is they're not trained teachers, most of them. And so they get frustrated. They're like, why can't you just do this? You know, like I did this. And so that is really damaging to kids, unfortunately. And they feel not seen and they feel hurt. And then that relationship becomes, you know, a nagging, I'm getting nagged relationship, and the fighting ensues and the homework wars begin. And parents can avoid that by kind of removing the emotion from the process and teaching them the pattern or skills, or you can find someone who can help you with that.
Yeah. That's good advice. I think as a parent too, as one, it gets stressful too, because you see just trying to keep up, right? It's like a sinking ship. Mm-hmm. You start to see the ship sinking when they're going through their semester or whatever, and it becomes very anxiety.
Yeah. Right. But that's your anxiety.
Yes.
The parents. That's where the parent is. And what is anxiety except like imagining the catastrophe that hasn't happened. Right. So the parents imagining, oh my God, if they can't do this, then they won't go to college and they won't get married and have kids. And so your anxiety, and the kid feels that, like, oh my God, it's just a missing assignment. Like, why are you freaking out, mom? And but that's really, that's damaging to both of you, right? You don't want to feel anxious and they don't want to feel all this pressure. And so that's hard for parents to be objective. And that's why coaching works well, is because as coaches, we don't have that same fear for our children. We're like, we're here to help you. And anything you do that's positive is a win. And if you think about it as a sinking ship, yeah, that's going to be stressful, right? But if you look at it just on a situation by situation basis, and you're like, you just turn something in and ask your teacher if there's anything else you could do, that's a win, you know, and we're starting from there. And now let's find the next win. Oh, you're tired. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back tomorrow. But you have to really, like, hope springs eternal when coaching. And you can't just like, you can't kind of like bring the baggage of the past semesters into the situation.
Yeah.
No, otherwise the kid's going to feel it. They're going to be like, well, you're still, you know, I just did this, but you're not happy. You're just worried about the next thing. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I like outside resources if you can use them, because they're not emotionally attached to your child. I mean, they're invested in helping them be successful, but it's not emotional.
Right. Yeah.
And so it just, everything goes better.
Hopefully. Yes. Yeah. And usually it does, I would say, and from my experience.
Yeah. It's helpful. Yeah. That's great. Okay. Do you have any advice? You've actually shared tons of wisdom, but as we wrap up our time together, do you have any other wisdom for parents who have a child who struggles with executive functioning skills to help them get through school in a positive way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the important thing for parents to remember is, like, focus on yourself. What I mean by that is, like, you know, you have to stay emotionally regulated. You have to stay calm. You can't be so afraid that if they're missing things or they fail something, that their life is going to fall apart. Like, as a parent, the most important thing you can do is maintain a positive relationship with your child. Because if you do that, then they will return to you over time and they will seek your knowledge and expertise. But if you're the one freaking out and stressing and scaring them, they're going to move more and more away from you into other things that you can't control. So it's like, the more controlling you get, the less control you're going to have.
Yeah.
So I'd say really just try to focus on a positive relationship. That doesn't mean give up and just be totally permissive. It means, like, continue to offer help continue to be a parent. Your job is more than just managing schoolwork. It's showing affection, love, safety, you know, creating a warm, nurturing environment. School is a part of that, but you can't control everything. So I would say, you know, strengthen your relationship with your higher power, whatever that is, like really focus on being positive and supportive and less on trying to control their schoolwork, and just be as Mr. Roger calls it, those helpers out there who are ready to, you know, serve your child and support them, but not necessarily try to be controlling.
Yeah. And I think your great advice was to be an excellent advocate on the school side as right. well, that you really have to help get the school on board.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
With your child.
That's true. Yeah. And if you, and advocacy, man, there's so much to it. I would definitely encourage parents to Google COPA. It's the Council of Parent Advocates and Attorneys, because you can find an advocate that is worth their weight in gold. I mean, even if you pay someone, you know, $250 or $300 once a year to meet with them for an hour to just get their input on what's going on and that can open the door for so many services and supports that you would not be aware of if you find the right person. But definitely, if you feel like, I want to advocate for my child, but I don't know how, you can go to COPA. You can even just join as a parent and look at the threads, or anytime you post something in there, you're going to get like some of the most incredible answers from people who know everything about advocacy, who have had kids, who have gone through the most challenging circumstances and became advocates because they were so passionate about it. I'm going to the COPA conference. It's in San Francisco in March. So I would definitely encourage parents to look there.
Is COPA a national organization?
It is. Yeah, it's okay. National. It's probably it's definitely national. It's probably some global affiliates, but it's very based on the special education rights and laws, as well as 504 plans and things like that are in the United States. So it's a great, great resource. And it's a place to build community with people who are probably in very, very similar situations.
Yeah.
As you are.
And then if you're in a private school.
Yeah. I mean,
you're not going to get the same kind of services or support. You need to just find out what they will do for your child. Right.
Right. But the cool thing, or the good thing about the private school, is that you're a paying customer, right? So you have a little more flexibility, I think, to kind of say, hey, like, this is what I need from this scenario. And if you don't get it, you know, then you can put your money in a different private school. Or, right. I mean, I think the ultimate is have your kid, if you have a kid with disabilities or challenges, getting accommodations or even services through the public school, and then using your private school money to pay for like an executive function coach or educational therapist. Like, you're saving money, but you're getting like better services because they're legally required and have like higher expectations. You know, there's a lot of legal expectations for how services are delivered and to what quality and degree and reporting and things like that. So that's kind of, in my mind, the best scenario for parents with kids with special needs.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, I could talk to you all day long, Sean. This has been really, really beneficial. I've learned a ton personally myself, and I'm sure others have too. I wish I would have talked to you like 10 years ago.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
This was really helpful. So anything to add before we sign off?
No, I just think I want to thank you, Kate, for creating this podcast. I feel like it's so valuable. Parents really do need community and support when raising kids with ADHD. The not to scare parents, but I did want to share that there was a study done on there's this thing by this guy named Hattie, and he did a study on the 256 most impactful factors on student achievement. There was over 3 million students that were like basically evaluated on this like 20-year study. And the most impactful, you know, factor on student achievement is called teacher estimates of achievement. And it's like, how well do you know a student, and how do you provide the right supports and scaffolds for them? And as a parent, you can do that as well. So remember, like, just your knowledge and expertise in your child is the most impactful thing for helping them. But the most negatively impactful thing, if you went to all the way to the bottom of the study, the thing that has the most actual negative impact on students, can you guess what it is?
Difficult relationship with your parent.
No, it's ADHD. ADHD.
Oh, was the bot?
Is
oh,
the
yeah.
most, it has the most negative impact on student achievement. So the reason I share that is not to scare people, but to tell them, what is ADHD but a lack of executive function skills? which goes back to the idea that if you teach these skills, you're giving your kid the best possible chance of experience, not only academic success, but, you know, long-term marital harmony, long-term social outcomes. All these things have been found to be, if better executive function skills equate to a better life, better school success. So just prioritize them.
Yeah. These poor kids, but we can do it. You know, mm-hmm. It just takes advocacy, parent education, using mm-hmm. outside resources if you can, and start planting the seeds in your ADHD children when they're young, right? And as they go along, so they feel like they can build these skills and build a better life.
Yeah. Well, also, and because ADHD is, it's a gift in some senses. I mean, anybody who has ADHD who's learned how to compensate for it, I'm an adult with ADHD. And I could say,
okay.
I would say I would not be as successful as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a teacher, without my rapid thinking. And, you know, like someone with ADHD, they can get interested in anything that catches their attention, and they can dive deeply into it, hyper-focus on it. And so ADHD can also be a beautiful gift if you learn how to manage it.
Yeah. And look at you now teaching others how to be organized and plan and prioritize. It's fantastic.
Right. It's my vocation. I found my calling because I got into the thing that was most detrimental to me, which was my impulsivity. So.
Yeah. And you learned and taught yourself how to be able to do these things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're like a shining example that it can happen, right? In time. As you mature and grow up and feeling good about yourself. I love that story.
Thank you.